Now we present an encore presentation of Protect Your Assets with David Hollander.
Well, this was a tough third week in a row on Wall Street. Markets finished down as China, Russia, COVID fears, and Fed policy all weighed in. The Dow was down 3%. It's now down almost 14% for the year. The S&P 500, talked about this last week, closed at 3924. Remember what I was saying last week? You got to listen to this market segment. Anyway, 3924, down 3.3% for the week. Year to date, we're off almost 18%, getting very close to that correction territory again, which you know is down 20% or more. And that would be that 3,900 mark I was talking about last week. So if you missed the podcast last week, go check it out. NASDAQ down 4.2, off almost 26% for the year. And the international index, the EFI, off almost 5% for the week, down 4.9% year to date. Again, correction territory, down 23.4. So you have the NASDAQ and the EFI both in correction territory. 10-year treasury, well, bright spot there, closed the week at 3.2%. Yield now is 1.7 for the year, up again, not bad. And the oil, $87 a barrel. Bonds down again, off 11% year to date, off for the week 1.2%. So very few places to hide overall when it comes to the market. And so let's look at what happened this week that dragged down the market. Well, it really started on Wednesday, if you think about it. The stocks had a heavy tone coming in as reports are coming out of China that there's more lockdowns in the city of Chengdu. And it's more than 21 million residents were going to be locked up for several days of testing after COVID again spiked in that region. And then we had a massive blow to Europe. Actually, this just happened. Russia's Gazprom, G-A-Z-P-R-O-M, Gazprom, I guess. They said that their key gas pipeline to Europe can't reopen, and it's today, Saturday, as a new technical issue has developed. And so you add to that the Fed, with the Fed talking about the pain, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. The market just didn't like it. And the European market also is figuring that next week the ECB is going to raise 75 basis points. And that's kind of what got that going. Unemployment number was relatively positive. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the key here, which I was saying last week, was the unemployment. And so in a good area, what we had happen there was we did have a decent drop in the unemployment rate, down to 3.7%. And so that was down, which could have been a lot worse. If it had been worse, this market would have gotten even worse. So S&P fell into the technical support area of 3,900 that I was talking about. And I think it's too early right now to call a bottom to this bidless decline in stocks. But there is evidence that a bottom could form at the 3,900 level in the sessions ahead. And as we said last week, it's going to really depend on what we see coming from the Fed, because obviously the Fed is driving this market. And as we set in higher highs and higher lows, this is a very basic, what we call historic strong technical development, in that we're building a base right now at this level. So let's look at the unemployment number. And I'm going to say it was just right overall. You could have it too hot, too cool, or just right, like Goldilocks. This was just right, because like I was just saying, hiring slowed in August, but it remained sturdy as employers added 315,000 jobs. The estimate was 300,000. The softer consumer spending gains, rising interest rates, and a sputtering economy as things start to slow down. The important thing, again, was the unemployment rate. It went up, meaning there's more people unemployed. Went from 3.5 to 3.7. You know, we'll take it. 2.2 tenths of a gain. It's okay. This was according to the U.S. Labor Department. And that's because the labor force, the number of people working and looking for jobs, shot up by nearly 800,000 with many of those on the sidelines going back into the labor market. So this is good news, as it makes it less likely that the Fed will get more hawkish and raise rates too much. And there's a good chance with this number that they start to cut rates. Again, we're not looking till the second half of 2023 for that to happen, but it could happen, and that's good news. Now let's turn to the bond market, because the bond market tends to predict the future as well. So turning to treasuries right now, and the 10-2 spread, remember that? That's the 10-year treasury, which closed the week off at 3.19%. The 2-year, which is paying more interest, closed at 3.39. So that's called an inversion. When you have the 2-year paying more than the 10-year, the market's signaling that we're going to have some problem in equity. So that's called an inversion. And the overall gain in that area, I think, is positive. And here's why. Because the bond market's saying right now that the economic slowdown, which you could say is looming, it's not going to be as bad as feared a few weeks ago. That's what at least this inversion is saying. Growth right now remains solid, and this implies that any slowdown may not be as bad as feared. And so bottom line, when you compare those numbers, it's essentially a 20 basis point spread. It's not great. It's not a great inversion, because we never like inversions, but it's better than, say, 50 basis point spread, where it was a few weeks ago. And so if 10 twos can continue to rally and move towards the 0%, meaning there's no inversion or differential, sooner than later, that's a positive sign from the bond market, and it would be the first one that we've seen in a while. So we're generally moving in the right direction, and that's a good thing. Now, some more news to just think about would be the period that we see after midterm elections. Now, remember, midterm elections are going to be held on Tuesday, November 8th this year. And if you look at history, it seems to be on the side of markets in midterm years. In the 12 months prior to election date, market performance is typically not so great and can be volatile, just like we've seen this year. However, in the year after midterms, market returns are positive on average by about 15%, regardless of which party is in power. And markets in many cases tend to prefer a gridlock outcome, which is where we see a split between the House and the Senate, potentially cross parties. And this is likely, given what we're seeing at this moment in time. Now, remember, this past performance, no guarantee of future results, but again, just some things to think about. And so the other thing I'd like to talk about this morning is what just happened last week, because this is also important when you look at history. And this is, I'm going to call it, a history of Fed warnings. Now, one of the phrases that the financial media this past week has been keying in on from Powell's speech, Chairman Powell of the Fed, his speech last week, was his declaration that we're likely to experience some pain, quote, in the economy as the Fed continues to raise rates to try and bring down inflation. Now, Powell became the third Fed chairman in my career to explicitly warn of tougher times ahead for the economy or markets. Fed chairs explicitly warning of future pain is not a regular occurrence, and that's because they're usually cautiously optimistic or not committed on the path of the market or growth. Very seldom do you get a Fed chairman make a warning on growth or valuations. So as a result, I wanted to look back at the two previous warnings I witnessed, review the market performance following each, and see if there are any conclusions we can draw. So warning one, Greenspan, remember Alan Greenspan, January 20th, 1999, he was testifying in front of the House Ways and Means Committee when, after nearly 80% gains in the NASDAQ over the prior 2 years, this is what Greenspan said. He said that the rally in stocks was unusual, as it wasn't being driven by rising earnings. And he said that the rally will likely have difficulty in being sustained, the famous irrational exuberance speech, you may remember. What happened to markets after that warning? Well, they rallied at first. The S&P rose through 1999, and 1 year from the warnings, January 20th, 2000, the S&P 500 had produced a 15% gain. But Greenspan's warning proved accurate, and in early 2000, stocks rolled over hard as the tech bubble burst. By the time the bottom was reached, October 9th, 2002, the S&P 500 had fallen 38% from when Greenspan made the warning. Warning number two, Ben Bernanke acknowledges the risk in subprime. Then Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, testifying before Congress, addressed the growing housing crisis. Mr. Bernanke acknowledged there would be some pain in the housing market, but also said he thought the risk from the housing market could be mostly contained in the subprime area. Well, what happened after the warning? Well, markets rallied initially. The S&P 500 rallied more than 10% over the next several months, but the gains didn't last. And March 2009, the S&P 500 had dropped more than 40%. So what does this mean for markets now? Well, to me, there are two takeaways. First, if a Fed chair warns about something, you better listen. Powell warned of some economic pain ahead, so we should all prepare for that pain. Second, be suspect of any relief rallies following these warnings. In both warning instances, stocks rallied for months before the economic realities both Fed chairs warned of came to fruition. That doesn't mean we should automatically fade every rally going forward, but we should remain skeptical of those rallies until the factors that are behind the warnings, higher rates, higher inflation, slower growth, start to ease. And remember, past performance isn't indicative of future results, and in both instances, the warnings were given closer to the highs than we are now. But the bottom line is Powell warned of pain, and we should listen.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed does not consider your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.